B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper!
And Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, a sports hub coming in from the Town Fair Tire Studio here in Dorchester, Mass. Patriots, Ravens tomorrow night, 8-0, 5-2. Is it the Patriots' first real test on Sunday Night Football as they travel to Baltimore against the Ravens? Lamar Jackson, who has had a good season so far and had a great second half in their last game against the Seattle Seahawks, a bit of an upset there. John Harbaugh, the head coach there, has had the Patriots number at times. Like, is this going to be the week one, as Paul Perillo of Patriots.com referred to it as on Felger and Maz during his usual weekly appearance. And I don't know, like, I'm starting to feel like we're maybe overhyping this. Then again, the last time I felt this confident about a supposed big game was the Super Bowl against the Eagles. And how'd that turn out? I like Lamar Jackson. He's had a better season. I was one of those doubters who said he couldn't throw, but he's been better this year, better-ish, still relying on his mobility and breaking big plays that way, and that's what he did in that second half against Seattle in that win over the Seahawks. I just feel like, you know, Belichick doesn't allow running quarterbacks to take off. He never has. And there was a stat I should have left it up, dummy. He's never allowed 100 yards or more to any quarterback on the ground since the Belichick Patriot Brady era. It's never happened. So I don't think that's going to change. You know, they're going to try to, you know, you're going to try to beat him left-handed, right? So, like, keep him in the pocket, force him to throw. If he throws like 225, 230, a couple of touchdowns, I think the Ravens end up winning this game. I do. And then, you know, get ready for it, at least on a national standpoint. Your ESPN, CBS Sports, all them. Like, everyone's going to be saying, hey, Lamar Jackson is a legitimate top three MVP candidate. And rightfully so. I don't know, Chris. I just don't see it happening. And the Ravens defense, I think, kind of stinks. And they were one of the teams. It was a dud of a trade deadline this past Tuesday. Like, a dud's dud. Yep. I wanted some excitement. There have been moves leading up to it, obviously, like the Patriots
even
getting Mohamed Sanu, right, like names.
Like Jalen Ramsey going to the Rams.
Yeah, Ramsey goes to the Rams. Laremy Tunsil goes to the Houston Texans. Micah Fitzpatrick goes to Pittsburgh. Like, there were explosive deals. But on trade deadline day, nothing. Aqib Talib goes for pocket lint to the Miami Dolphins from the Rams. The Ravens, I expected to make a move for a pass rusher, because that's where they really have a deficiency on that side of the ball. Whether it was, you know, Vic Beasley out of Atlanta, who was a dumpster fire of a team, Leonard Williams, who goes from the Jets to the Giants, and those two teams haven't dealt with each other since 83. Like, that one doesn't even make sense to me. But they do nothing. And, okay, they get Marcus Peters, but I don't know. You look at some of their games, and at least from a statistical breakdown, like, they're not that great.
No, they're not. I mean, they've struggled 12 sacks. They've struggled to get after the passer, you know, all year long. They're 26th in the league. And passing defense, Baker Mayfield, Patrick Mahomes were both able to light them up, get over on them. So they're certainly susceptible, and I think that's sort of an X factor in there. The interesting thing, too, about their defense is they have the benefit of having the offense that leads the NFL in time of possession. So they're not spending a ton of time on the field, but they're still having some issues. Mm. So this is one of those games where I feel like if the Patriots can go out there and not turn the football over – and stay on the field, I think they can make some hay against the Ravens defense. I really do. I mean, turnovers are big in every game. There's no question about that. But I think if Baltimore is able to hold on to the ball, which no team's been able to do against the Patriots this year, not turn it over, and then force some turnovers on the other end with Brady and co, then I think they'll be in business in the game. I really do. I mean, I think that's kind of the equalizer. That's the equalizing factor there.
Yeah, and look, that's a difficult place to play. You know, although the last time the Patriots played there in 2013, they completely annihilated
them. They blew doors.
Yeah, so, but that being said, tough place to play. John Harbaugh has the extra week, typically, and especially when you look at the Super Bowl in recent years, like when teams have had an extra week to prepare, they do tend to get the Patriots' number. So there's some things to be concerned of. And again, John Harbaugh has had this team's number in the past. But still,
relatively speaking.
Yeah, relatively speaking. But personnel standpoint, like, I don't know. I feel like we might be overrating the Ravens a little bit. I hope that I'm right there. I'll put it to you this way. If it ends up being like 35-7 and we come in here Monday and Felger said it too, if we're talking about how Lamar Jackson kind of sucks and has been overrated, I'm not going to be that surprised. You'd also think the Patriots offense would look a little bit better tomorrow night as, well, we don't have any confirmation yet. You have to wait until 4 o'clock this afternoon to get him activated. But rookie N'Keal Harry, is going to see his first game action of the year. You would think Tom Brady, who's been a bit bitchy about the lack of weapons so far this season, Grumpy Gus, if you will, would be happy to have the big rookie back, right? Like, he might not be able to run routes, we don't really know, but the one thing he did flash is his size, the ability to box out, kind of, you know, get up for it, at least in that preseason game against Detroit. You'd think Brady would be happy to have N'Keal Harry back, right? Huh?
You know, he's missed a lot of football, missed a lot of training camp, missed 8 regular season games, so, you know, he's just got to try to work at it every day. And it's going to be up to him to, you know, put the effort in and to, you know, everyone's there to help him. But, you know, you got to go out there and you got to do it and earn it and earn the trust of your teammates and coaches and stuff. So it's good to have him out there.
That answer, Chris, speaks to something you wrote about in the Globe and you talked about on this very show last week. He seemed like he's, like, enjoying it this year.
No.
Like, the whole experience.
No. I think maybe it feels a little more like work than it has in the past. I mean, there are seasons that have been tough seasons for him in the past. 06 was a grind, given what was around him. 2013, I think, was a grind, given what was around him. This one, he's grinding through it.
Yeah.
He's definitely grinding through it. And I think, you know, a lot of it is, we've talked about this too, and we just had the segment on the Sports Hub Celtics show talking about thinking about X's and wasting time on X's. He's still all about Antonio Brown and what could have been. And I think he's having a hard time getting over that. And if you look at that and you put that in the greater context of the last two seasons and feeling like he's had to go above and beyond to be in a position to counteract what they've given him at wide receiver, I think there's some frustration there. And it's like, oh, here we go. Here's another guy that doesn't really know what he's doing. N'Keal Harry, that they brought to me, that I have to get up to speed and that I'm going to have to figure out, and I don't trust this guy and I don't know if he's going to be in the right place. And also, I think he also notices that there's a little behind the scenes pumping of N'Keal Harry. Have you noticed this?
Oh, like, he's a first round draft pick.
And he's looked so good in practice, and Bill keeps talking about, Bill's even had comments that are sort of like, well, you know, the mental, he's been able to keep up with the mental and like all this other stuff. And I found in my time covering the Patriots that this type of behind-the-scenes tire pumping tends to be directly proportional to how much the team needs the guy to, you know, succeed for them to look like they've covered the position well enough.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It could be genuine. It absolutely could be, and everything they're seeing could be real. But I'm just telling you, I've heard this in the past, and normally when they need, like, a rookie guy to step in right away and play, it's like all of a sudden he looks great and ready to do it.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm not buying it. Is the short way of what I just said is I'm not buying it.
Well, and if you go back to the preseason and in training camp, you know, I remember Josh McDaniels saying, like, well, he's coming along, like, in terms of route running. Like, it seemed like there were some issues. You were reading some of the beat folks that were down there on a day-to-day basis saying he was lining up incorrectly. Now, again, big body, and he might be able to help you out in, like, a Gronk-type role, you know, in boxing people out in the red zone. But do I expect this guy to light it up? Like, I don't. Like, I mean, and be a good route runner? No.
When has there ever been a rookie? Take receiver out of it. But, I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, rookies who've missed this amount of time going back to the preseason and been able to just, like, step right in.
Throughout the league? Yeah, no, none really come to mind.
It's not easy to do. I mean, even if you're a veteran. Remember when Brandon LaFell came back and missed all that time coming off a Super Bowl season?
Yeah.
Guy who would earn Brady's trust. You know, Brady called him JoJo, lockers near each other. Remember when he came back and he was dropping all those passes? I mean, when you miss this amount of time, I don't care who you are. I mean, look at Patrick Peterson. He's looked terrible.
Yes. Yeah.
So when you don't play, here's a guy who's never played in a real NFL game, and he's missed this amount of time of competitive football. I just hope the bar is set realistically for him, and so far it seems like it's not.
Well, in terms of how Brady sounds, I actually stumbled inadvertently across some proof of how much it's changed. And granted, I'm going back 15 years, but because I'm a bit of a loser, I went down, like, I'll just watch whatever on YouTube and end up in vortexes of it where I'm, like, watching 2 or 3 hours of old 80s games. I've talked about this before, like, recently I just watched, like, the Niners-Giants NFC Championship game in its entirety on YouTube. I went down a vortex of...
Where's your wife during all this?
usually at work. Like, I sleep in late. You know, it's the benefit of working afternoons with Felger and Maz. I'm in bed usually just like a sloth until like 9:30. She's at work working hard. I spent like almost two or three hours down a vortex of old NFL primetimes with Boomer and Tom Jackson. I was like, oh, I'll watch this one from 2004. This one. I watched the one from 2003 and the Patriots win that they had against Indianapolis, the Willie McGinnis stop at the one for that big win. And, you know, they go through that game. Do you remember Dedrick Ward?
Yeah, I remember Dedrick Ward.
I brought this up to Felger. He's like, I don't even remember that name, and I was covering that team. In that game, they had just picked up Dedrick Ward basically off the trash heap. He caught a touchdown bomb from Brady in that game in Indy. And in that game, Boomer, and I think it was Tom Jackson saying, like, you know, talking to Tom Brady this week, he said he got a good rapport with Dedrick Ward. Like, just like that. And granted, we're going back way, way back, 15 years, but it's like Dedrick Ward off the street, Brady, even if it was fake, was like pumped to have a new weapon, talking him up. Like, it's just such a juxtaposition compared to now. And Brady has become, you know, the greatest quarterback of all time. And a lot has happened in these 15 years. But I don't know, even can you just like fake it a little bit just to make, you know, put a shine on what's going on with this team right now? Because you're 8-0. You feel like, looking at the schedule and the rest of the league and how stupid everybody is, you could probably go 16-0 and go back to another Super Bowl. And he's still just like, oh, well, he's missed training camp. He's missed 8 games. We'll see. Like, the whole thing when it comes to the offense this year is, like you say, it feels like work. Like work feels like for any other schlub.
Yeah, I think that part of what you're talking about in 03, you got to remember, now, that's his second full year as a starter, so he doesn't know as much of the offense.
Sure.
So I think the gap now, this is part of the problem, is that I think that the knowledge gap is so wide between Brady and any receiver just starting out in the offense that it's really challenging, and it's probably frustrating for him because he feels like he has to slow down to try and get this other person up to speed. And I think just you look at it in terms of rookie receivers, I mean, there's one rookie receiver for the Patriots who's caught more than 40 passes during the Belichick-Brady era, and it was Deion Branch in 2002, which happened to be Tom Brady's first full year as a starter. So he was much closer in age, ability, and acumen to Deion Branch than he is to any of these guys now, and I think that makes a big difference. And I think he's also just realistic about the amount of time. Like, he also said in those comments on Friday, because I went back through the transcript, he also said, you know, it's hard for a veteran guy, like Muhammad and I are still getting up, it's hard for a veteran guy in the middle of the season to get up to speed. And he talked a lot about, but the difference is at least we know those guys can play in the NFL. With a lot of these rookie receivers, you're not even sure, like, I think N'Keal Harry can play in the NFL. Obviously, Belichick does, but you don't know it until you see it. He might not even, never mind being a receiver in the Patriots system, he might not even be an NFL caliber receiver. And the other thing I'll say quickly is that I think the Gunnar Olszewski thing kind of bothers Brady.
How so? What do you mean?
I think the idea that this Division II guy who's a converted defensive back and is just miles away from what they really need at receiver is taking up a roster spot, and say Demaryius Thomas isn't.
Is that informed speculation?
No, that's just me.
Hmm. Well, that's a nice little nugget right there, Gasper, as we go to break. If you want to talk about the Patriots in this game against the Ravens tomorrow night, 617-779-0985. We'll take your calls on that. Red Sox have a new, what is it, baseball police officer? What the hell are they calling High and Bloom over there?
Chief baseball officer.
Yeah, chief baseball officer. We'll get to him. What's going to happen with J.D. Martinez now that the World Series is wrapped? Is he going to end up opting out? I know you have some thoughts on the Red Sox you want to get to. We'll get to that next here on Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Burn Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Over the past 8 weeks, we've identified that while we have incredible strengths and skills within our organization, we could benefit from adding new ideas and a perspective to the baseball operations department. We compiled a list of about 20 candidates that were reviewed and scrutinized internally, and in the end, it was only one we felt compelled to ask permission to interview, and that candidate was Chaim Bloom.
I would say generally, you know, our top priority is going to be that sustainability and competitiveness over the long term. And that could take many forms, but that's really going to be the top priority as we think about moves.
Nerd! All right, the new nerd in the neighborhood, Chaim Bloom, chief baseball officer of the Boston Red Sox, being introduced and then asked, hey, what's going on with J.D. Martinez and Mookie Betts this offseason? Aheim earlier this week. Red Sox offseason begins as the World Series is over as the Houston Astros fall to the Washington Nationals. Ballsy team. Just quickly on that, I don't know how much you paid attention to that World Series or how much people actually did overall. First two games, great. Game six, game seven, excellent. The middle, meh. But good for the Nationals. Ballsy team. And in game seven, I love how the whole thing imploded for the Astros. Zach Greinke dealing. You pull him at 80 pitches. You're going to go to Garrett Cole, right? No. It's like the Malcolm Butler benching in the Super Bowl moment for the Houston Astros. It's inexplicable. I can't believe that it happened, but it ultimately led to their demise. The Nationals come back and win that thing. But now the World Series is over, Chris. There's a decision to be made for J.D. Martinez. His agent, Scott Boras. Will he opt in? Will he opt out? I know you had some Red Sox thoughts. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I just think, look, this is obviously a challenging and complex offseason for the Red Sox with J.D. Martinez's decision. We'll see what he does and how that can either free up payroll or handcuff them with payroll, what to do with Mookie Betts. It's pretty clear that they felt like to build what you had Chaim Bloom talking about in terms of something that's sustainable for the long haul, like when Theo Epstein was here, they felt like they had to go and get some ideas and some acumen from outside their organization, which I think was great. But watching that introductory press conference on Monday, I was like, wait. Is the people who are already in place, who are very, you know, the quality quartet they have in place, the group of four, gang of four, are they going to have Bloom working for them, or are they working for Bloom? Because this is unclear to me in terms of just they went so out of their way to praise the existing people. And for me, my concern is that Bloom is not going to be empowered to come in here and make the changes and the decisions that he wants to make. You know, this has to be his show. Like you had John Henry say, well, we don't want an autocrat. I get it. You want someone who's going to solicit more feedback than, say, Dombrowski did, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think Dan Shaughnessy had it. I mean, there was an idea there that Dombrowski walled himself off a little bit. I think that he, you know, maybe ran something that was too singularly focused in terms of what he thought. That's fine. I understand. You don't want that. But if you bring this guy in, empower him to be the GM. And that's sort of my concern here. Like, everybody has to understand, whatever the title is, that the buck stops with Bloom. And I want that to be the case. And so I think ultimately it will be. But this has the feeling to me a little bit, Jim, of like an arranged marriage. Like, they wanted the best of both worlds. They're like, well, we really like the four people we have in charge, but that won't go over well from a PR standpoint. And we need to show that we're open to change after a third place finish. So we'll bring this guy in, but we're really going to marry these two things together. And it's like, I don't know how that's going to work. If Bloom's the chief baseball officer, to me, he's no different really than Dombrowski or Theo Epstein. It's his show. He runs it. You know, if the four of them, the group of four, who have done a very good job, and I understand why the Red Sox like having them around. They've been in the organization for a long time. But if it's Brian O'Halloran and Eddie Romero and Zach Scott and Raquel Ferreira, if they all think one thing and Bloom thinks another, and it's 1v4, guess what? That one outweighs that four. It has to be that way. And he has to feel empowered. And if he wants to get rid of one of those people, he should be able to do that, no questions asked, because it's his department. And I'm hoping he imports some people from Tampa Bay as well. So that's just sort of my concern. Like, I just thought that I get wanting to be conciliatory and appreciative of the people who have been here for a long time, but I just thought there was a little bit too much of that and a little bit too much of these people have been here for four World Series titles. And it's like, okay, that's great. If you really, you know, if you feel that way, then you should have just gone with that. If you're going to bring this guy in and let him do Rays things, then let him do Rays things and let him do what he does and change your organization, because the organization does need to change.
And why do it this way, though? So, like, I have all these cooks in the kitchen to dumb it down for someone like me. Like, is it because the Red Sox want to be inclusive, that they don't want to step on the toes of some of those that have been tenured and been here? Like, it just does. It does feel like, you know, when we finally got to this and started to listen to some of that sound from earlier in the week, it's like, does this guy even have any power?
You know, exactly. Exactly. And look, I spoke with Sam Kennedy on Friday, and I think, you know, the idea is for Bloom to have some power. But the reality is,
he feels like a figurehead to me.
The way they've set this thing up, I think it's really easy. He's a first-time general manager. He's a young guy. He's stepping into a situation with people that have been in the organization for a very long time. I think it's really easy for his authority to be challenged. And I've said this before. Collaborative, great word. Love it. Sounds good on paper. You know what? Last year's Celtics should have been collaborative. How'd that go?
Right.
Collaborative always sounds good on paper. It's really easy for a collaborative to devolve into an unclear power structure and a power struggle. And I just don't want to see that happen. And I think that, remember, when they brought in, this isn't really new, because when they brought in Dave Dombrowski, I don't know if you remember this, they wanted to keep Charrington. The idea was Charrington will stay with his title and Dombrowski will be above him as president of baseball operations. And Charrington was like, get out of here. I'm not doing that.
And
like,
I don't blame him.
And Charrington walked. They didn't fire Charrington. Charrington resigned.
Yeah.
So they've always, it's kind of like hedging your bets, right? It's like, okay, this person's good and we like them, but we think we need something else. So, you know, let's just keep everything. And that's sort of like where they're going. And I just hope they let Bloom come in here and make the necessary changes to get the organization sort of up to speed with the Astros and the Rays and the Dodgers and the organizations that I think right now are at the leading edge, the cutting edge of baseball operations.
Is that what happened with them bringing in La Russa and Frank Wren with Dombrowski, or were those Dombrowski guys?
Those, I think those were more Dombrowski things. La Russa's still there. They yeah. like him. So he's still there. But I mean, Frank Wren was 100%, you know, a Dombrowski, you know. Frank Wren was to Dombrowski as Brett Bielema is to Bill Belichick.
Okay. So did you happen to read John Tomasi's thing on JD Martinez from a few days ago?
I don't think I did.
He was talking about like what team would be a suitor for him.
Yeah.
Because I'm of the belief, Chris, and I've felt this way for a while, it's just a formality. Like Martinez is going to opt out. He's going to be gone. They're going to trade Mookie Betts. And they may hang on to him, but they're going to move him by the trade deadline. We'll see what happens. Because maybe the return isn't going to be that much because Betts doesn't want to sign long-term with whatever team it is. But to Martinez, American League team, kid, you know, he really can't play in the outfield all that well, so you got to figure it's going to be American League. But he was saying, like, there could be teams that could come out of nowhere just because it's a hitter's ballpark. They got money to spend. Baltimore, Kansas City, Cleveland, a contender, and he even throws in the New York Yankees because maybe New York looks at, and I know they need pitching, but maybe yeah. they'll look at Giancarlo Stanton and say, you know what, we screwed up here. He's broken down, can't get through a season. And if we go back to a couple of postseasons now, he was god-awful in the playoffs against the Red Sox.
Oh, he was so bad. Not even, oh.
And Martinez was awesome, you know, in that postseason run and
looked
World
like
Series
me
championship.
Seventh grade gym.
Oh, he stinks. So there's no shortage of American League suitors for Martinez. Where do you think he lands? But do you also feel like these two moves are, like, he's out and Betts is going to be
well, I mean, dead? I think he opts out because this is kind of his last chance to really cash in, right? And I think, you know, he's coming off another strong season. At his age, it's his last chance to try and cash in. And a lot of times, he could end up with a deal with a lower AAV, but if it's more years and more money, like, that's a win at the end of the day. In terms of where he ends up, what's interesting to me is he was great for the Diamondbacks. Like, that was sort of his launching point in Major League Baseball. Is there a National League team that's willing to overlook his defense? Because it was bad this year. But willing to overlook his defense, say, the way the Cubs overlook a guy like Kyle Schwarber, or, you know, the Dodgers overlook a guy like Max Muncy. I mean, there are ways now, I think, that some of these National League teams find to hide or bury guys that aren't great fielders but are strong bats. If he can somehow get a market from some of those National League teams that are maybe looking to get over the hump, then I think that could make some sense and really sort of push up his market. If it's just the American League teams that have the DH, then I don't know how well he'll do. And I think that's why some people question whether he'll opt out. You know, that's Boris's job to figure out, is there a market beyond the American League?
And on the World Series, did you have a thought? Did you like how it blew up in the nerds and the computers and the, you know, like what the data sheet tells the manager to do, and it blew up in A.J. Hinch's face?
I mean, you know, I have to be honest, I wasn't really that into the baseball playoffs this year. I mean, you know, game 6 and 7 of that series I started to watch, flipping back and forth between the Western Conference Final of MLS, the LAFC versus Seattle Sounders. You're welcome, baseball. But I thought, look, it was a great series, and I give the Nationals a ton of credit. I don't understand, though, if you're A.J. Hinch. I mean, do you think that was the data that did him in, or do you think it was his own? I felt like that was an old-school managerial mistake. Like, you wouldn't normally use Gerrit Cole in that situation, but you know he's available for Game 7, so you have him up. Why is he up if you're not going to bring him in?
Well, so here was, and Matt McCarthy, who works here at the Sports Hub, he has an awesome column on this at 98.5thesportshub.com, in which it is titled, The Nerds Cost the Astros the World Series, and it was glorious to watch. Now, I take his word for this because he's a baseball nerd. Yeah, plugged in, baseball guy, hardcore baseball podcast on 98.5 of Sports Hub. And just reading from it quickly, the nerds were exposed on baseball's biggest stage, and it was glorious to watch. A.J. Hinch's decision to pull Zach Greinke was one of the worst managerial moves in World Series history. He cost a team a title because he couldn't see the game unfolding in front of him. What a robot. Hinch took Zach Greinke out because the data warns managers not to let their pitchers face a lineup in the third time through the order. The analytics will tell you that starters struggle the deeper into the game that they get, but the numbers can't possibly quantify how a pitcher actually looks in that moment. And wow, did Greinke look good, and he did. So
He did, but he hadn't been great in the playoffs. So I agree with what Matt's saying there. Greinke hadn't been great. I didn't have a problem with them pulling Greinke at that point in the game because he pulled him after the walk, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like hit, whatever. I didn't have a point. My problem was, okay, you pulled him. It's game seven. I know Will Harris has been good, but you have, like, right now, the best pitcher on the planet in your bullpen warming up. Like, let him go, Pedro. Like, bring the guy in.
You'd think.
And the point of this, too, is that we've seen this before. Do you remember Joe Maddon in game seven of the 2016 World Series pulling Kyle Hendricks? Do you remember him pulling?
Yeah.
He was rolling. And he pulled him just to get John Lester in the game. So there is some truth to what McCarthy is saying, but I don't have as big an issue with them pulling Greinke because, honestly, I didn't think Greinke was going to pitch that well in Game 7. I thought he'd go into the fetal position.
Me too. So after he gave up the home run to Rendon, though, he looked a little shook.
He did, didn't he? I mean, to me, I felt like you got what you were going to get out of Greinke. The issue for me was not going to the bullpen. It was you went to the wrong guy.
Oh, right. But who? I have to believe that, like, you know, some of the data also speak like, this is why we need to go where we go now. Like, if nothing else, read McCarthy's column on it, 98.5.
But Hinch said after the game, and it didn't make any sense, and people poked holes in this, he said that Cole was only going to come into the game if it was to close it out. Well, why is he warming up? Why is he warming up in the fifth inning then?
All right, you want to join this conversation, anything World Series or Red Sox related, have at it, 617-779-0985. We want to turn our attention back to the Pats, though, as they have the big one against the Ravens tomorrow night. And I've said it before, I'll say it again, there's going to be a quarterback. If one of the quarterbacks in this game goes off, get ready for legitimate MVP talk for this quarterback come Monday morning. And it ain't Tom Brady. We'll get to Lamar
Jimmy Garoppolo?
No. Oh, the hell with him. We'll get to Lamar Jackson coming up next as the Patriots get ready for the Ravens. We'll do that after the Sports Hub headlines here with Sean Silver.
This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Jackson over the middle. Caught by Hollywood Brown. See you later. Hollywood to the house.
First down, shotgun. Jackson out of the pocket. Jackson trying to run for it. Jackson avoids, spins, he's in, touchdown.
Yeah, I've seen him play a few times this year too. And, you know, just exceptionally talented. Speed, quickness. He's throwing the ball well. Just has great awareness in the pocket, when to run. I think his productivity is, you know, really been unmatched. So he's got a very unique skill set. It's very difficult to simulate, you know, a level of that type of player with that level of talent. And, you know, our defense is going to be a big challenge for all of us.
So it might not be fair, but I'm under the impression, Chris, Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub, and that's Tom Brady, talking about Lamar Jackson, followed by some highlights of Lamar Jackson from the 5-2 season thus far for the Ravens, Patriots-Ravens tomorrow night. It might not be fair, but unless Brady, like, completely goes off, you know, for, like, 335, three touchdowns, he can't get in the top three MVP conversation if the Patriots even win this game tomorrow night. I really believe that. But if Lamar Jackson throws for 2.25, two touchdowns, rushes for one, oh, you're, from a national standpoint, like your Nick Wrights and all those you know, people that everyone around here hates.
You kind of look like Nick Wright.
I do. I kind of like Nick Wright too. I think
really.
Yeah, I think he's.
I would not think you'd like him.
I think he's good at what he does. He's where he is for a reason. But all that being said, those folks from a national standpoint, if Lamar Jackson, which would be pedestrian-ish kind of numbers, but 225, two touchdowns, he's going, and the Ravens win, he's going to be in that MVP conversation, in that top three talk with Deshaun Watson, Aaron Rodgers.
Russell Wilson.
And I think he should be. Like, I don't know. He's been good. Like, he completely took over the second half of that game in Seattle against the Seahawks. Maybe he does this kind of thing, and he's able to. So, all right, he doesn't rush for over 100 yards like he has in some of these games, like he did against Seattle. Like, if he throws, you know, they make him one-dimensional, and he still puts up decent enough numbers, and the Ravens win, he'll be talked about as an MVP candidate, and I think they might be right to do so.
Well, especially if he does it against the Patriots defense, given the historic numbers the Patriots have put up. I mean, you're 19 interceptions, 25 turnovers through eight games. four touchdowns allowed to offenses, four touchdowns scored by them. I mean, that's incredible. So I think nationally televised game, young quarterback, dynamic style of play against a defense that many are saying is the greatest of all time, I think that would propel him. I mean, it's kind of like the professional football version of like the Heisman Trophy race, right? A lot of times it's not what you do, it's when you do it and who you do it against.
Yeah. Oh no, for sure. And that's why it would get skewed, because the Patriots defense has been so good statistically and just eyeball test alone. If he does that and the Ravens win, that's why he's going to get that kind of.
Yeah, and plus if he does have a decent night against the, like, you know that it will be like the Ravens, and I have a lot of respect for Greg Roman, their offensive coordinator. I think he'll have some nice stuff dialed up, but the Ravens are not going to out-scheme the Patriots. If Jackson's able to do what he's done against other teams, it's going to be the sort of like schoolyard theory, which is like, I'm just faster than you and you can't catch me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it's going to be. And I think that will open a lot of eyes and there'll be a real wow factor to that.
Yeah, I still think, though, a lot of this has been overhyped. And I think that we talked about how that Ravens defense isn't really all that good.
Not that great.
I'm not going to be surprised if the Patriots go in there and roll and it's 34-7 or something like that.
I mean, even the Seattle game, you know, give the defense credit, the Ravens defense, I'm talking about credit, but really a lot of that was turnovers.
The pick six that Marcus Peters got, that was a god-awful throw by Russell Wilson.
Yeah, that was one of the worst throws I've ever seen Russell Wilson make.
Yeah. So this also kicks off the, I've mentioned now a few times, Paul Perillo, Patriots.com, making his usual Wednesday appearance with Felger and Maz, said, hey, welcome to week one, as it's Patriots-Ravens. This does kick off this five-game slate that even before the season started, we looked at as, oh, this is the this is the tough stretch of the Patriots' schedule. It's going to make or break their year at Ravens, at Eagles. At Ravens, then the bye, at Eagles, host the Cowboys, at the Houston Texans, hosting the Kansas City Chiefs, and Patrick Mahomes, I would imagine, will be back by then. What's the toughest on these to you?
Well, I mean, obviously you have to look at the Chiefs. You know, they've owned the Texans. That could be a tough road game, and I think Deshaun Watson is an MVP candidate. But when I look at that one, I think the toughest in that stretch, probably at Philly, just because they're not intimidated by you. Wentz is a talented quarterback. You know, I think he's sort of flying under the radar this year. He's not having like an amazing year, but I mean, if you look at the way he's playing, and if you put, I don't know, say Jimmy Garoppolo's name next to those numbers, I think people would be flipping out and saying he's having a great season. 14 touchdowns, 4 interceptions for him on the year. I think that one's tough. I also say Dallas. You know, I think when the impending NFC champion Cowboys roll into Gillette, that's going to be a tough game.
You're still dug in on that, huh?
Dug in. I'm in the take. I'm in the take bunker on the Cowboys in the Super Bowl.
That was one I felt like I got wrong, and I needed a take do over after a few weeks. Oh, look what they're doing with Kellen Moore. They're opening things up for Dak Prescott. I mean,
they got the tackles back, though. It's all about those tackles.
Lose at the Jets. I will say the
Dak
one thing
is
that
a winner.
Well, the one thing that concerns me about that game is their ability to run the ball and what Nick Chubb was able to do to the Patriots defense last week, what Frank Gore was able to do to the Patriots defense when they played in Buffalo earlier in the year. Like, I don't know, you have Ezekiel Elliott, who was one of those type of backs, you know, big legs, big ass. He can make his own yards, and they have a really good offensive line when they're all healthy. Like, that could be problematic.
I think so. I mean, I really like the Cowboys from a talent standpoint. We'll see what the coaching ends up looking like, and I think Prescott's one of those quarterbacks, you know, kind of like Russell Wilson earlier in his career, where he's not going to be afraid of the Patriots, and sometimes they'll fool him, but he'll still run around, buy some time, and make a play. You obviously, you have Amari Cooper out there who's having, you know, another great year on the verge of free agency. I just think the Cowboys have all the pieces here. Let's see if they can put them together. And, oh, but you think Michael Bennett might be slightly motivated
right
for that game?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I've said for a little while now, I think the one that's going to have a lot of hype surrounding it, it'll feel probably like their toughest game in this slate is at Texans that first Sunday night in December against Deshaun Watson in Houston there. And they're still kind of a dumb team. Like they drive me crazy. Like they go to Kansas City, they come back, they win that game. They're down like 17-0 in that game. They win 31-24. The following week, it's like the most Bill O'Brien thing ever. They go to Indianapolis. They can't get out of their own way. You look at the stats of that game. It's a million penalties, bad turnovers. They lose 30-23. It's like, again, the most Bill O'Brien thing ever. I'm mad because I knew I should have bet on that game, but I was too much of a puss to do so. So, I don't know. I look at their schedule, and they have some lambs between now and that Pats game. And, you know, they're at it's a London game against the Jaguars tomorrow, 9:30, at the Ravens. A little bit tough, you'd think. And then they host the Colts. I don't know. Those are all winnable games, but they're going to drop one of them somewhere in there. But
yeah, I mean, especially now J.J. Watt being out for the year, I mean, that's huge for them. And you question their pass rush a little, but I just think Watson's kind of making the leap. You know,
yeah.
I'm sort of looking at it here are some quarterbacks who can challenge the Patriots, because we really haven't seen those guys. Like, you know, this week I wrote about this. This will be the sixth time in 7 weeks that they will have faced a first or second year quarterback. And the only guy in during that span who was not a first or second year quarterback was Colt McCoy, who, I'll borrow a phrase from you, you would say a bum's bum. I'll say a backup's backup. I mean, that's just what he is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's taking out the first two games, Roethlisberger, Ryan Fitzpatrick. So, again, over the next 7 weeks, you face six first- or second-year quarterbacks. I think it gets a little more challenging here as you get into Wentz, Prescott, Watson, Mahomes.
He's looked so impressive, Watson, this year, and I think a legit MVP candidate. And you see the play that he made last week against
Oakland.
That was
Randall Cunningham-esque.
Yeah, he gets like kicked in the face, still gets up, throws the touchdown strike. So it does look like he's made the leap, but I can't get that playoff game against Indianapolis out of my head. He was so god-awful in that game last year. But it does so far look like he's made the leap. The other thing I like about him, you've seen any of his post-game press conference stuff when he's detailing plays?
Yeah.
And he's not like, juxtapose him and Baker Mayfield, who had a Ryan Leaf-type moment earlier this week when he gets frustrated and storms off when he's asked a question, right? Like, it's, I know, it like really speaks to why you hate Baker Mayfield. Juxtapose that with that kind of attitude with Deshaun Watson, who most guys like, oh, like they would look at you like at the report and be like, oh, you're so stupid, you don't get this.
Totally.
I'm the football player. That's the way that Baker Mayfield goes about it. Deshaun Watson's like, no, it's a complicated game here. I'll break it down for you, and you know, I'll simplify it as best as I can. Like, the kid's just a pro. Like, I love it. I love how he carries himself.
He has that leadership quality to him as well. And I think that's a great comparison. I mean, Deshaun Watson versus Baker Mayfield in terms of the way that they handle themselves, the way that they've gotten the most out of their teams this year. I mean, you look at it. I mean, Mayfield just not ready for prime time as a leader or as a quarterback. And Watson, to me, is the opposite.
All right, five questions for Chris Gasper. Got nothing to do with sports. Next.
Gasper and Murr. Gasper and Murr. Gasper and Murr. Gasper and Murr. On 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I got five questions for Chris Gasper of the Globe. I got five questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got five questions.
Five. One, two, three, four, five.
I got five questions. I hope this segment ain't too
All right, so we wrap up the show each and every week, for the most part. Five questions for Chris Gasper. They got nothing to do with sports, so let's dive in, shall we? We recognize daylight savings time this weekend, tonight actually, Chris. Is it about time to do away with daylight savings time? And
yeah,
like the whole changing the clocks nonsense?
I would say so. You know, there's been a lot of talk here about Massachusetts going to the Atlantic time zone. Have you heard about that?
I have, but refresh me.
So basically, we'd be on the same time as like Nova Scotia, and we'd be like on different time than New York or Philadelphia or Washington.
Okay,
but we'd get more sunlight.
All right, that's all I care about. Yeah, so you want to change it, though?
Yeah,
because we have more sunlight.
Change it, more sun.
And I think my understanding is the misconception is that it has to do with the farmers. No, it's about like the parents and the school systems don't want the kids like out in the dark waiting for buses. Is why it really doesn't change.
Like, is that what it is?
Something like that.
In the morning, right?
Yeah.
In the morning?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
I'll tell you.
That sounds very like 1980s Nancy Reagan's Just Say No to Drugs.
Yeah, right. But
right?
That darkness at 3:30 in the afternoon, it really, like for those that work, yeah, because I've had, you know, we all have at some point, I feel like I've had those jobs where it's like you're up in the morning,
it's dark.
Oh, yeah,
I had one of those.
You leave and it's dark, like it's just perpetual darkness. Like it leads to depression. It makes you want to die. Like it's just the worst.
It just saps your soul.
Get those sun, invest in one of those sunlights.
I've seen Patriots players, like Edelman has them. I've seen Patriots guys with them. Yeah, I should get one of those.
We got those as a wedding gift. Those things are the balls. Oh, question number two:
you don't need heat if you have that, huh?
If you find my poor dad stayed over. I forgot to put the heat on for the old man last night. He was frozen.
Heat is to Murray as parking is to me. Apparently,
I'm a cheap SOB when it comes to the heat. Sorry, Dad. Question number two: if you find a spider in your house, do you leave it alone, kill it, or do you get someone else to deal with it?
No, I mean, I normally kill it. I feel bad about it. I try and leave them alone. But, like, the other day, one dropped down from the ceiling, like, right as I was watching TV. And I was like, oh, this isn't going to do. So I had to kill it. And then I never tell my wife that it was there in the first place. Obviously, if she's listening, she knows now. But I will never tell her because she gets, like, super freaked out.
Same thing. We'll move on to question number three. Many towns ended up postponing Halloween due to the weather the other night. Your thoughts on this, Chris?
Yeah, weather's obviously tough to predict. I know it's about the safety of the children, so I get it. On the other hand, though, I'm sort of like, come on, helicopter parents, just send your kid out there. Like,
it's the dumbest thing ever. It just, you know, again, it like speaks to the wussification of America type thing. Like, it's a little rain. I remember in my day, how many Halloweens I went out that you got soaked, and so what? Your costume got ruined. You still got the candy, and that's what matters. Like, the postponement for this weekend. It's
listeners,
so stupid.
Do you enjoy being lectured on how to raise your children by two guys that have no kids?
Yeah, yeah. Listen up, parents. Chris, how do you get yourself out of a bad mood?
Oh. I'm kind of like Kyrie. I don't. It just has to change.
the mercurial Chris Gasper.
Yeah.
Finally, Rage Against the Machine announced this week that they are reuniting next year, 2020. Their first show is going to be at the Coachella Music Festival in Indio, California.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I know you love all things California.
I do. I want to go to Coachella one of these days.
The sights and sounds of all things, especially the sights of Coachella. But Rage Against the Machine, were you a fan?
Not really, no. But I'm not like a big music person. Nothing against them, but no.
You know, I like, as most olds are, you know, guys that graduated in the 90s and, you know, like all that kind of music at the time. Yeah, I loved Rage. And the one and only time I got to see them, it was a double bill, them and the Beastie Boys. It was like a benefit show, I remember it to this day. Free Mumia Abu Jamal concert that they held at the Continental Airlines Arena in New Jersey. It was myself, Angie C, who still does local radio around here. I think she works at CLX, and she's, you know, like a five tool player, and comedian Gary Gulman, who, by the way, has an awesome special right now on HBO. But at the time, he was like, you know, just cutting his teeth as a stand up. It was like the most random thing ever. They were so good. And this is the get excited, youngins, that never got to see Rage Against the Machine, because I can't imagine it's changed. They were so good that for the first 30 minutes, I'm like, this is fake. They're playing a CD. They were so unbelievably tight. Probably the tightest band I've ever seen in my entire life. They were unreal.
Really?
Unbelievable.
So you thought they were pulling a Jim Murray with the Wiki Wiki? They had it all pre-recorded?
It's Chris referencing the night that I worked at Axis.
This is awesome.
DJ and X Night. Instead of actually doing my job, I had pre-recorded a three-hour DJ set so I could listen to the divisional playoff game, Patriots, Raiders, the
snow game.
The snow game, the fumble game, the Adam Vinatieri game, yes. I wasn't going to miss that game. I had to listen to it on WBCN at the time. And I just pretended I was wiki-wiki, like moving the turntables and whatnot. No, pushing
buttons.
The wheels
of steel.
No, the whole time, just drinking, listening to the Pats game. That will do it for us, yes?
We should try that with this show. Do you think we could pre-record this whole show, 3 hours?
Yeah, we got to mix in some phone calls.
We could just do like a Felgren Maz. We could pre-record like 3 hours of Jimmy G talk.
What if there's breaking news, Chris? No, you got to be here live.
Well, there's
for the
still
people.
An update, you know, Maven here.
I guess that's a fair point. Yeah, let's see if we can pre-record for next week. That will do it for us. Thanks to Sean Silver, who joined us and was in on the Sports Hub headlines. Brian Robb, B-Robb, Boston Sports Journal. Read us stuff there, bostonsportsjournal.com. If you're a Celtics fan who produced the show, we have McTakey coming up. What do you have 29 minutes to do a show today?
Yeah, actually we could pre-record this show. Yes,
should have.
I live an hour away. I was called in for 30 minutes, but don't you worry, I will be getting my money's worth. We are going into the take cyclone. Remember when you tried 60 takes in 60 minutes?
Yeah.
Oh, we're doing way more than that.
Oh,
we are going into the take cyclone. I have many takes ready to go. It's going to be fast. It's going to be furious. You want to get your quick take in, 617-779-0985. We are going at ludicrous speed.
I like it. All right. McTakey, Matt McCarthy coming up next. You want to get on with him, 617-779-0985. He'll take you up to 2:30 when we have a random college football game on. All right, enjoy the rest of your weekend. I'll be on the post game tomorrow night with Beadle after the Patriots and Ravens. Of course, Chris will be on the pregame with him. And otherwise, I'll talk to you Monday with Felger and Mass. Bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.